1040JC.
KG4LSL. I finally got the bait finished, and now it's clear-coated and hanging, and I'm waiting for it to dry.
What'd you finish up now? I didn't catch what you said, I don't think.
I airbrushed what they call a lipless crankbait. It's kind of like a rattle trap. Just got it airbrushed and got the clear coat on it and waiting for it to cure.
The bait part, I thought you said base at first. My ear's not too good. Worse today than usually. My ear's not great anyway. That's a good deal. Do you buy those things pre-carved? Do you carve them?
The blank plastic bodies. They're easy to handle. I haven't done any wooden ones. Now I do have some old antique Rapala wooden ones and some others that I found in a tackle box that was just being thrown away. And you know, the baits are just kind of beat up and eaten up and need to be repainted, and I haven't tried to paint them yet. That may be another project for another time.
I wish I'd hung on to all the old baits I had that came on my dad's box and back to the fish. We had bass arenas and all kinds of stuff. They were all little pikies and all kinds of older stuff. Of course, they were deteriorated, but I guess I never figured on using them until later on when I got an airbrush. By then, they were all gone. We'd gotten rid of them. That was years later, I guess, but He had a nice tackle box full of bass plugs and saltwater plugs too in a separate box. He used back in the late 40s and early 50s. We'd normally go down to Blue now where the Space Coast is now and fish Pompano and usually in the spring try to go down there for a week maybe if he could get off and sometime I'd. We had a spring break at school or something. We'd go down there and serve or something. We could. But those old cedar baits, those things, they were all handmade, basically. They were good. I don't think they were great fish catchers like the new stuff is, but they were, that's all they had then, I guess.
Yeah, and there's so much detail you can get on the newer baits nowadays. It would have taken days to hand paint the detail that you can get in a bait now. With just some stencils and an airbrush, you can pretty well do one every 20 or 30 minutes if you're just boogieing through it. I kind of like to just kind of take my time a little bit and play around and have a good time with it. So that's what I did today. I kind of experimented with a little bit of a color scheme here. I'm using pearl. Pearl colors. I've got a pearl blue and a pearl purple. The blue is on the top and on the head. The purple is kind of down on the bottom of it with a silver mid-body. And it came out really nice. I'm just waiting for this stuff to cure so I can take my X-Acto knife and clean up a couple of the edges. But there it is.
The Japanese they fish in these area trout. They're basically a trout place area fish. They got an area of fish and they use this 2-pound line, use these tiny baits. A lot of them just use, they don't use spinning, they cast, but they have these ultralight casting rods and the fish, it's all put and take, you know, they don't keep anything. I've seen some huge fish that some of the guys that used to work with catch, and they use these very, very small, either balsa or plastic lures, you know, and they're all the hand finished ones, those things are about $40 a pop. And the Silver Creek series that I buy, those things are $14. They're about, you know, they only maybe an eighth of an ounce. Eighth of an ounce at the most. They're, you know, less than 2 inches, 50 millimeters.
Iowa makes a makes some pretty good fishing equipment, whether it be baits, rods, reels. I've got an old, I think it's a gold edition Daiwa rod. I think it's a 6.5 foot medium light with a Daiwa bait caster sitting on top of it that I've had since 2001, I think it was. My mom gave it to me for my birthday, and I've had that thing ever since, and you know, caught some really good fish with it. I don't take it out very much anymore, just because of how old it is and you know, the sentimental value. So I use a lot of Lou's rods now, and the Abu Garcia reels, use them too. But hopefully, if things go right, I'm going to start making my own baits and, you know, just get away from the commercial stuff that the fish see all the time and go into something custom to where, you know, maybe creates a reaction bite.
Interesting thing about the Japanese domestic manufacturer stuff is totally different than what they sell in the U.S. You know, good area rod, you know, just, you know, it may be 6 feet long, and like I said, it'll cast down to maybe a gram and a half or something like that, but those things are like, you know, $400 U.S. And the reels, they use either Shimano or some of the Daiwa reels. They only sell them in Japan, though. You can buy them, but, you know, they make them. Yeah, they're just geared, and they have all kinds of bells and whistles on them. You know, it's hard to make them backlash, and they'll fish down to 2 pounds on those bait casters. But the old Iowa stuff, especially the stuff, you know, that you're talking about from 20 years ago or more, it's all still made in Japan there, and it still brings a premium. And the Abu stuff, I've got some Abu Cardinals, you know, they were marketed by Zipco back in the 70s, and here people still buy those things and rebuild. They'll even make new bronze gears for them, because a lot of guys in the Great Lakes still like them. If a fish is there, because they're so damn tough, they don't, you know, it's all, they don't have any aluminum gears. It's all bronze gear and bronze bushings or bears. And the old Abu stuff was about as tough as it came. It was expensive even back then. But, the new stuff that they make, you don't see much of it here in the U.S. It's made in Japan, but of course it was made in Sweden then, but there's nothing, I don't think there's anything Swedish made anymore, because they make them in Japan, and the Japanese-made stuff is really, really good. And the old Lou Speed Sticks, I bought those things back in the late 60s. I kept those things for years. They were good rods. I really enjoyed fishing with them. They were probably the most comfortable rod I ever owned to cast.
The Japanese make some really good fishing stuff. I mean, they always have. You know, and I don't mind the Japanese and the Asian stuff so much, because, I mean, you think about it, that's their main industry in those countries is, you know, a lot of it is fishing. So, it's kind of like my daddy always taught me. You know, when somebody talks who does something all the time, you listen. So, you know, and that's the Lou Speed Stick is what I use now. They're now a carbon fiber type of a rod now, and graphite, and you know, they're really light. I'm doing some research on some rod blanks that you can buy and eyes and everything else, start making my own rods. And, you know, if I start doing that, then if my wife doesn't string me up by fishing line, then we'll slowly start phasing out some of the commercially made stuff and go more custom made.
Blake's very reasonable. Even, you know, you don't have to, you know, not name brand, but you, a lot of people make good blanks that are more than usable for most people, and it's just, you know, buying the guys and getting the wrapping done. I've done that, you know, years ago I've done it, and there's a lot of guys making custom, most of your custom flyrod business has always been pretty big, but it's bigger now than it ever has been, and the spin rod business is the same way. It's just that finding somebody that's got the time and wants to do the effort to wrap them correctly and, you know, put the correct rail seats on them and put them in the right spot, find the spine of the rod and that sort of thing. And once you kind of get the feel of it, it's not really that difficult. It's just time consuming to do it, and you have to have a little bit of space as well. But I know a couple of guys that start out they make a rod for somebody every once in a while. They turn it into, you know, where it's a 6-month wait to get a rod, and especially the fly rods. I'm talking about glass rods. See, the glass rod business, the fly rod business is booming now. People like that Soft Traction, and you know, they're $500-$600, and they'll wait 6-8 months to get one. And a lot of people buy the blanks, as you're saying, from certain makers and just roll their own. But, yeah, you can look online and see there's a lot of good stuff online. You know, lure-making stuff, too. It's like you said, you just got to find something fish don't see every day. And, you know, you'll generally do a little better than a standard off-the-shelf bait.
It would be kind of cool to make it into a second business. I've got a couple friends of mine that spray custom baits, and you know, they hold down full-time jobs, and then they're spraying baits in the evenings and on the weekends, and I think it's 2 or 3 of them, and it's all they can do to keep up. And they've gotten onto one of the Bassmaster pros has started using their baits, and that's keeping them even busier. So you know, that would be kind of cool, but I'm doing it just for the enjoyment of it.
Sometimes when a hobby turns into business, it loses its appeal when it turns into work. At least that's what I found over the years. Something you enjoy doing, you go into retail or start selling the same stuff you like. You get kind of bored with it. And I think that's true in a lot of people that get into, you know, that enjoy fishing, isn't working a fishing store, and they just get bored with the whole thing. You know, having to answer customers' questions all the time, deal with all that sort of thing, and all the new stuff coming at us, becomes a chore instead of a hobby. But I think that's a good way to do it. You know, Bill Jones stuff, and I remember years and years ago. And I know you remember this, when we used to. One of my buddies, when we were in high school back in the 60s, and you know, he poured his own, you know, plastic worms and stuff, and we had a good time doing it. It was a lot of fun. And we caught a lot of fish too, but it was just enjoyment. It was just, you know, for a hobby. It wasn't it would save us a little bit of money. I don't know whether it actually did or not, but we had a lot of fun pouring them and trying all the different colors and stuff.
Yeah, one thing I don't want to do is to lose the enjoyment of fishing. So, you know, there has to be a balance, like with anything else in life. There always has to be balance. And I'm learning that. You know, I used to do a lot of work, and I used to work my tail off. And, you know, now I can't do it anymore. So I'm having to direct my attention somewhere else, to where I can still feel like I'm kind of productive, and there's a balance there somewhere. I'm still looking for it, but there is one.
You don't want to, you know, you got a lot of years to go, and you don't want to, you know, you don't burn out all your hobbies. You're tired of them. That's what happened. That's what happened to me, is especially if you get to the point where you can't do some of the things you were able to do when you were younger. It makes you disappoint you a little bit when you figure out that, well, I did this 5 years ago, but whoop, I can't do it anymore. Not able to, and that kind of, you know, disappointing, a little disheartening, but don't burn all those, you know, that's one thing about ham radio, it kind of ebbs and flows with some people, but you know, but you'll always, I say always, most people will always graduate back to it at some point in time.
You have 10-year hiatus from ham radio. And it was not my decision. I got rid of that decision maker real quick. But, you know, I did take a bit of a break in it and starting to kind of roll back into it. And I'm that type of person, if I find something that I enjoy doing, and I'll sit there and over-enjoy it. And it's real hard for me not to come down here and just sit on the radio all hours of the night making contacts, whether it be FT8, SSB, or even on 2 meters, and just sit here and just look at computer screens and radios and chasing DX and all stuff that I did when I was younger. You know, but it'll burn me out, and then my radios will sit here for months on end without doing anything else. So, you know, everything in moderation.
And for DJC, well, you know, Jimmy, that's kind of what happened to me. I was real, you know, heavily in HF and 2 meter sideband and that sort of stuff when I started out back in the late 70s and went through about the, you know, probably mid 80s or so, and then we moved to another location. And we had a good location to put up an antenna, but I got busy with work and, you know, became a project manager on a couple of projects, and they were just all working all the time sort of deal. And then, I always had a handheld, but I haven't had an actual mobile radio in a car in 40 years, probably. The last one I had was a truck back in the early 80s, I guess. And I always carried a handheld with me when I was working, up until I retired, even when I worked, did a lot of driving and, you know, outside sales. I always carried a handheld with me and talked to guys on different repeaters here and there, and that sort of thing kind of broke the monotony when I was stuck in traffic. But I never, that's not as far as it went until about 2017, maybe, or 2018, I got interested in some of the satellite stuff. And then I said, well, I'm not doing anything now. I said, yeah, it might be a good time for me to get back in it a little bit. And I got a deal band handheld and got a mobile rig I used as a base and got back involved. And I still haven't done anything with HF. I continue to think about it. But I'm not really sure I want to delve into it that deeply right now. I don't have a good location for an antenna, and I don't really want to waste my time with it if it's not going to work out like I think it would. But I'm like you, I'll walk away from it for... I monitor downstairs sometimes. I turn the radio and my handheld on downstairs to anybody that I know, and I'll say, hey, but I don't necessarily go somewhere just to do different things. I still do some scanner activity, listen to my scanner occasionally, that sort of thing, but it's just not, as far as sitting there working on that ship, I don't know whether I'd be that interested in that anymore or not.
Sitting here, I'm looking at my HF rig now. I'm just kind of monitoring 20, and monitoring 20 PSK. And one thing, when I was in Atlanta, my antenna was not in a really good location either, and it was only up about the apex of it. It was an 80 meter inverted V that I built, and it was only up 25 feet, I think it was, and the way the land sloped, the angles were all off, and I still ended up working numerous countries digitally. And then once I got here, got done with the move and everything else, and I was able to get some time in to look at FL rig and get it to communicate with my radio. And so I can start doing some PSK and some other digital modes. And I'm having fun with it. So I think, you know, antenna-wise, as long as you're up about 25, 30 feet, you know, it'll do pretty well. Thankfully, it's more, it's not as much line of sight as it is ground wave and and tropospheric.
My work QRP anyway, back in those days. I got my first all-stage QRP with 5 watts. Like I said, I think I've got about 70, I may have 75 countries, something like that. But by that time, the sunspots were really good back in those days. It was pretty easy to work anybody on 5 watts on 15 meters, especially 10 to open up, and 10 to 15 be wide open to Japan sometimes. And I enjoyed it, and I think I'd probably be interested in digital meters now. And I think it's a lot more efficient when you're running low power for sure. And like I said, I'm up about maybe 25 feet here, and I could probably maybe do an in-fit sloper down to the ground. But I've talked to several people. Some people say it's okay to feed from the top, you know, as long as your coax is close to the radio. And some people say it doesn't work, but I may give it a shot later on in the year just to see if it works or not. That won't be an expensive mistake in 4DJC.
KEG4LSL. Well, Jerry, if you ever need any help trying to get an antenna up or anything like that, let me know. I mean, I'm just a couple of miles down the road, and I'll be glad to come over and give you what help I can give you. You know, we can build you an antenna or what have you, and just see what we can do. And I know definitely we'd be able to work 10-meter ground wave, probably 20 meters, definitely. Well, I don't know about 80. That at night, that gets kind of, we may be a little close for that one. But, yeah, we can definitely do some work on it.
I mean, I can just put it out the window up here. And, yeah, I was looking at a bar in fed, just one of these small ones. It's only 41 feet for 40, 20, and 10. And you don't really, it's got a 49-to-1 balun. You don't really need a tuner. It's not a link dipole. It's just an in-fed. A lot of people like those. I thought I might give that a try because I wouldn't have to run but a couple of feet of coax to it. And could open up the window here as light as it is and just temporarily put it up here at the corner of the window and run it down to the ground at the back of the yard back there. I don't have enough room for 80, I know, though. I don't have quite that much room, but I'm a pine if it just be wasn't. It'd be the noise level would be the thing I'd be most concerned about because I've got 2 transformers in the backyard and power lines running on at least 2 sides. I'm not talking about high tension, I'm just talking about normal deep power, telephone pole power lines. So I'm not real sure what the noise level would be like. But like I said, I'll probably get that a try when the weather cools off. I talked to a couple of people that had mixed. People said they had mixed feelings about running the infed with a, you know, from the feed point at the top of the, you know, at the top of the infed if it's as a sloper. But I think a lot of people are talking about, well, you put it up the top, you run the coax down the button to the ground. I ain't talking about that. I'm talking about running it from the end, you know, from like 3 feet to the 3 feet from the radio to the balun.
Would work, and I know I've got a slingshot here somewhere that I bought that I can put a fishing reel on, and you know, if you've got trees or something around, you know, we can certainly run it up through some trees. That wouldn't be an issue. The noise level, you are going to have a little bit of noise. Two sides of my property were bordered by, you know, regular residential power lines, and my antenna was fairly close to them. And you know, we had LED street lights in the neighborhood, and they were noisy as all get out. So I stayed at about an S3 noise level, but, you know, was still able to work things fine.
I can listen. Now, of course, I can listen on my 2-meter stuff, on my antenna here. You know, pick up a lot of stuff on 20 meters and 40 meters and 10, and you know, down to 17 and so forth. I can pick up, you know, I get pretty decent signals even with that, but obviously work a whole lot better with a tuned resonant antenna. But my problem is, the problem with me with antennas, I don't have any trees in the backyard or side yard at all. They're all gone. So I'd have to run it from this room with radio is down to the ground at a 45 or so. And that's the reason why I've been asking people about the NFED. The feed point would be up here on this end of it. And actually, it wouldn't be, but I could put the radio pretty close to the window there and get 3 or 4 feet of coax out, or maybe more than that if I need to, but feed it from the top end of the NFED half wave and see if I could do any good with it that way. But I would, even if it still be worthwhile, just to throw it out and see what the reception would, see what the reception would be like for the noise level without having a whole lot of money invested in it and a lot of time, trying to put something up or, mount stuff outside that can be like a portable deal and just see if it works or not.
LSL. Yeah. Put a little bug in your ear. I went on Amazon when I first bought this house, and we bought a 25-foot fiberglass telescopic flagpole, and it just sticks in the ground. So that may be something to look at if you're wanting to just kind of hold the end of a wire up. I don't see where that wouldn't do the trick phenomenally well.
I've seen these soda beams, where they have these blink dipoles. Where you can, just use a telecast. It almost looks like one of these extended fishing poles like they use in England for their, where they fish out, they call it lasering or whatever, where they fish out of these big rivers. It's about 25 feet long, and the dipole was supported on each end. It has one guy that goes to the top of the pole where the ballon or connector is, and that three-way setup is what they use in a lot of these portable operations for temporary use. I'd prefer not to have to do that. I prefer just have something that I could, attach it outside the house, run it through the window temporarily, and then put something, put a permanent connection out of where I could take it up and down. We wouldn't have to worry about somebody running into it or seeing it. We don't have an HOA here, but some of the homeowners here they're a little particular about what's going on. They don't, they see an antenna sometimes. First thing they want to think is, you're causing interference. That's really one reason I keep my stuff inside and have, since I've been here. But, I could put something like that temporarily, they wouldn't even see it, wouldn't know what it was, wouldn't care, I don't guess. But, there's a couple of options. I just like to see if the noise level is 2 hours is even possible. And I got one guy that my brother-in-law knows, he thinks he's got one of those portable type hand feeds, and he might be able to just get them to send it to me and loan it to me for a few weeks to see how it works out. That's a good option for me.
Yep. I've also got a friend of mine up in, I think he lives in Nebraska now. He lives full-time out of an RV. And he's got, I think, a 10 or a 15-foot top rail for chain link fence attached to his RV, and he's got these dipoles that uses ham sticks, and the antenna's got like 6 different band dipoles, and they're nothing but ham sticks mounted horizontally, 180 degrees from each other, and it works great. We do talk periodically from time to time on PSK, or sometimes we'll do voice from there, and he's running the exact same radio, the FT450D, that I'm running, and he doesn't have any amplifiers or anything else on it, so that may be an option as well.
And I've seen some other antennas like that as well. I've seen some commercial ones, some homemade ones done the same way. the guy that makes the aerial antennas, the little satellite antennas like one of them I've got, he makes a 6-meter dipole. It's made in a portable aluminum mast type deal that you get for these soda expeditions. So you got the two air elements on them, one on each side, and you just hold it up vertically to make it into, use it as a 6-meter dipole. I didn't even know he made them. Just when somebody mentioned to me, I said, that makes a good deal then. You could get out there, maybe it's a, you know, when 6 meters is open, it doesn't take much to get out.
We're starting to come up in the sunspot, so DX is a lot easier to work. I just watched a Venezuelan station here on PSK on 20. Just chatting away. So, I mean, it's been busy, and a lot of these guys, they're running 20, 30 watts. So, very exciting. Well, Jerry, I'm going to jump here. I got to tear down this airbrush now and clean it. That's the fun part. So I'm going to tear this thing down and get it cleaned up and get ready to go eat some dinner. So with that, I'll say 73s. I'll probably be back on here tomorrow and playing around down here in the workshop there. M4DJC, KG4LSL. I'll be clear on your finals, sir.
G4LSL, M4DJC. Listen, Jimmy, have a good one. And good luck cleaning that airbrush. I know that's a pain, and you know what? Those things, especially those tiny knobs, it's hard to get those things completely cleared out, I'm sure. Have a good afternoon. Good talk to you. Catch you later. 73.
M4ZEW Mobile, monitoring.
Hey, Ben, how you doing? M4DJC.
Jerry, I'm making a quick pizza run to go get some food for the kids. And trying to wrap up the weekend, getting ready for school to start tomorrow.
Pizza run early in the day today. Our grandkids weren't over here today. Sometimes they go to the lake, but I'm sure they had some. I think my son-in-law's brother was there getting his daughter back moved in at Clemson. And both grandkids start tomorrow, and I think they were excited to get back to school. My granddaughter made the volleyball team in the middle school. And I think she's excited to get back and start playing. She wasn't sure she was going to make it, but she went to camp and she learned a few things. So they're both going to be wide open tomorrow. We usually pick them up on Tuesday afternoons and maybe Fridays. My daughter's the assistant news director at Channel 4, and son-in-law works for Greenville County Council. He's got a council meeting on Tuesday, so we kind of give them a break, pick them up from school wherever on Tuesdays, and keep them over there and model them while, until they get home later in the evening.
Congratulations to her for making the team, and it sounds like you still have it worked out pretty well. This year we've got our kids in the extended day program, so they're there. I think that ends, they keep them up until 6 o'clock. This past year we were just doing the car lines. I was getting on the radio at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon pretty much every day just to have something to do while I was waiting to pick them up at the elementary school.
Tim got an extended daycare tea thing at a church down there in Greenville, but it's, I think this last year our granddaughter can go. I think it's her last year that she'll be able to go there, but they've been going there for several years now. So we pick them up from there, but we have to pick them up because she's got practice now. Three or four days a week, I think. So she'll pass from 3:30 to 5:30. We'll pick her up. The line won't be as bad. But I tell you, those school lines, elementary and middle school, those things are torture. I mean, they put a bunch of kids in some of these middle schools.
Absolutely. That's one thing. I bought a Uniden Bearcat scanner and had it in my car for a while I was studying for technician, because I was like, oh, this is a good opportunity to sit around and hang out on the radio, because I think, like, if I get there at 2, between going through the car line and then back home, it's probably 2:50, maybe 2:45, and that's like a 10-minute drive to the school. So the rest of that's just sitting there in the parking lot in line.
Where my granddaughter goes, they got the sixth grade goes in one line and the seventh and eighth going to other lines. You gotta be sure if people come in, they don't know which line to get in sometimes, and it confuses everybody. It backs up. If you get there at 2:45, you got a long, long line in front of you. It goes all the way out down to the main road. So we try to get there early, but it's a long wait sitting in a car, no matter whether it's 90 degrees or 30 degrees. And I'd much prefer to pick them up at the extended daycare when, I just go ahead and pick them up and take them home.
Our kids got into a couple of slots for summer day camp at Christ Church Episcopal. Now, that being a private school, they've got their own security force. So there's a dude, directing traffic and working the car line with a pistol on his side. I think that keeps people in line and keeps them from getting too rude.
Fact, one of our daughter's friends, where they used to live across the street from them, they moved. She teaches at Christ Church, and my grandson is teacher this year. He's in the fourth grade, I guess, yeah. My grandson's teacher left the public school there, and she's going to be teaching at Christ Church this year, too. That's a great school. It's managed. It's pretty expensive for the regular part of it, but they get a good education there.
Yeah, that's putting in a college tuition per kid. So we were kind of cool with setting up for a couple of summer camps that were a week or so long, and they really enjoyed it, and got them out of the house, and the instructors were really high quality. They were very high caliber. So I can imagine that she's gonna get in there, probably get a little better pay, and she's going to be among a higher caliber of faculty as well.
You don't normally get the kids that are problem kids. They don't stay in places like that long either. They've got some really good teachers that are specialized to handle that sort of thing. But it's a shame. It's as expensive as it is to get a kid in a charter school or have to move them. There's so many. It's like that in every state that has a charter school or something, or a STEM program. If you don't live in the area, it's real hard to get into them. There's a long wait list, from what I understand. Most of them, both hours will be able to go to. One of them's already going to Fisher, and the other will be at Fisher two years, I guess. And it's turned out to be a pretty good school, but it's not the same as Christ Church. And it's good, but it's not quite that good. It all depends on the staff, too. The staff, they kind of it changes from year to year, and you have some good ones that stay on, and then you get a lot of new people coming in and out of the place. And that's just that's the way the school system operates today.
Be true. I got to run. I'm here at the pizza place. But, I kind of wish that public schools got the money to provide the level of education that they do there at Christ Church. I think as a whole, our country would be a lot better off with some higher quality education just across the board.
I'll let you go in and get the pizza. Good talking to you, Ben, and catch you later. N4DJC clear.
Thank you, Jerry. KO4ZEW. Maybe I'll catch you on the nightly check-in, so I'll be clear as well.